And it was great. I mean, there was just every second of the way making that show, we thought that it was going to get canceled. You know, that network had kind of gone through a lot of just transitioning. There was like a lot of a lot of like merged acquisitions that were happening throughout that whole period of making Scavengers, and shows were getting cut left and right. So I was kind of like, oh boy, we're doomed. I mean, there's no way this thing's gonna make it. Initially kind of thinking like a much more just a fast approach to making this thing, because we had a tiny budget and all this stuff. And Charles did a couple style frames of just like the look for the short, and I was like, oh well, this is. And I think it was like kind of a new direction for him, and you know, I had a little bit of that kind of like Mobius influence and all that stuff, and I was like, okay, we're gonna we got to do this. And it definitely like even I'd say it like evolved even more going into the series. It was pretty wild. The characters became sort of like less cartoony, so we just tried to adapt to that.
Yeah, I remember. So I'm gonna linger on that for, or come back to that in a second. I just remember what I wanted to say. I remember, I think the very first animation I've seen from you was the Pepe Frog, like touching the stone. And it started going like really viral, like this kind of style of animation, like this animation specifically. And there were a few others that I saw. But I remember that one, and it was because obviously like the crypto movement, and the crypto movement adopted like Pepe the Frog and started like blowing it up, and I saw it on Twitter, and I think that's the first time I stumbled upon your work, like knowing who you actually are versus, you know, like seeing the short is like, ah, oh, that's super cool. And then like, you know, almost forgetting about it. You know how it is. Like you watch a short, it's like, wow, that was cool. And then like something else distracts you and whatever. But I wanted to ask you, so I'm assuming you just have like animation background, right? Like that's where you're coming from. Or how did you, like what happened before, like in between you getting born to you creating the Scavengers and then Scavengers Reign?
I mean, I went to the School of Visual Arts in New York, and I went for fine arts. I wanted to be a painter, so that was kind of my main focus. And about junior year, they opened up a digital labs on the west side, and I think just because you know it's fine arts and just a bunch of painters, nobody really wanted to like do anything with computers, so it was just this big digital lab that was just completely empty. And so I just started spending a lot of time in there. There was the full sort of Adobe suite and Final Cut and all that stuff. And I just started teaching myself just very, very basic, you know, just teaching myself animation through Flash and Animate. This was Flash at the time. And I was getting more excited about it, the idea of like being able to tell a story. And you know, and that was my means of doing it. It wasn't the prettiest animation, that's for sure, but you know, it was just I was like, oh, it's amazing that there's a tool here that can allow me to kind of, you know, create this narrative, and I don't need to hire a huge crew to do it or anything like that. It was a very kind of DIY approach, and I just got obsessed with that kind of idea of just doing that more and more, really into, and like any new kind of tool or trick that I was pulling, it'd be like I'd do a freelance job at a post house, and then I'd learn something about kind of focal blurs, and so then I would run back and kind of apply that to a short that I'm working on. And so it was like that became an obsession that I just continued to do and make these shorts while I was working in post-production for TV. I was working in advertising. It was kind of all over the place. And then eventually, it's in my maybe 23 or 24, I had made a few shorts and I was doing a series called Odin's Afterbirth. And that was someone from MTV through a friend just reached out and said, "Hey, we'd love to, we're going to do the version 2.0 of Liquid Television. I wanted to see if you'd be interested in being a part of that, and we could just commission you to make the next, chapter of Odin's Afterbirth." And so this was part three that they were commissioning. And I was able to hire a team. It was the first time ever that I was able to kind of like hire a crew. And this was where mentally I was starting to kind of get into, reaching out to animators that I really liked, people that I knew online.
Right.
There was this whole community, I don't know if you remember like the Vimeo days
Oh yeah.
and live and just that whole thing. And so it was fun. It was a very, and obviously we're talking like a small budget. I think it was, I had like 25 grand or something to kind of make this thing out of, but I just really went nuts with it. And I think that was kind of the moment where I was like, this is what I want to do, and I want to quit advertising. And so I left, and I focused on this. And I think there was a period of long period actually, where was not really making any money. Making shorts, maybe kind of questioning things a little bit here and there,
Right.
just like, what am I doing? But then, in every year there would be kind of like a new little thing. I started doing bumpers for Adult Swim, and that was just me kind of like slowly crawling up, up, and the bumpers kind of then became like, okay, do you want to do a short with us? And so eventually it became the scavenger short. Then I started doing shorts for FX, and so after the scavengers bit, I was also developing a show called Common Side Effects, which is the show that I'm wrapping up right now. That's for Matt, that's for Adult Swim. Let's see. We made the short, then Adult Swim kind of liked that and wanted to do a pilot. So then we made the pilot, and then they were kind of like, I'm not sure if this is gonna work or not. And so then a couple years went by, and then it got picked up by HBO Max, was HBO Max at the time. And it was great. I mean, there was just every second of the way. Making that show, we thought that it was going to get canceled. That network had kind of gone through a lot of transitioning. There was like a lot of there was a lot of like merged acquisitions that were happening throughout that whole period of making Scavengers, and shows were getting cut left and right. So I was kind of like, oh boy, we're doomed. I mean, there's no way this thing's going to make it. And I'm very surprised that it did, but we were
I'm
very
glad it
fortunate.
did. Definitely glad.
And I gotta say, we worked with these execs, Billy Lee and Aaron Davidson. They were the execs at the time, and I was very fortunate to have those two shepherding this project, because it's just a blast to work with, and really were very supportive about these kind of decisions, even if they didn't feel very conventional. I think we were really like, let's try to make something here that I don't know is as natural and subtle as possible, and let's, I don't know, just try to, even if it's kind of fitting within sort of a sci-fi genre, like let's just try to do something as different as we can. So I'm surprised that it eventually saw the light of day, but I'm very very happy.
I'm extremely happy. I mean, I watched it. I finished. It's funny because I started watching it, and then my business partner reached out. It's like, "Hey, have you seen Scavenger's Reign?" I'm like, I just started watching it, and then Ash reaches out, dude, you gotta watch Scavenger's Reign. Like, all right, I just started. give me time to catch up. And you know, I like to binge stuff, but this was the show that I didn't want to binge. I wanted to like watch every episode and kind of like soak it in. And the main reason is because, I mean, I grew up on like VHS tapes in the 80s and like movies from the 80s and 90s, and then anime that came out. I've been a huge fan of like a very classic kind of old school 90s, 80s anime, like, you know, Ghost in the Shell, Kawajiri's animations, like, you know, Vampire Hunter and, you know, Wicked City, all those kind of like super, like you look at those are like the super classics, right? And I've just been reflecting recently, and I have this conversation with a lot of friends that, you know, there's kind of this kind of dead rot in cinema, generally speaking. Like it's almost like you're watching sequel upon sequel of the same stuff or adaptation of the same stuff. And then whenever something fresh comes out, like I'm really like, it's better be good. Like we need more good stuff that comes out and is like really great. And it sticks and is, you know, and Scavengers definitely was that. I was surprised how different that show was from everything else I've watched last year, or even just in last few years, right? And I remember, obviously, you know, the short you've guys done. I rewatched the short recently too, just to kind of refresh myself to compare the two, you know, and like it was such a big contrast story, like just construction wise, not just the story. Obviously, was a different thing, but construction wise, it almost felt like, man, I'm watching like this kind of like Leonardo da Vinci constructions with nature, right?
Yeah.
That's basically what the short felt like. It's like, oh, like they're doing something to trigger something else, and that triggers something. It's sort of like this domino effect. Like, what was the inspiration for that?
I mean, it was a lot of stuff was kind of influenced by like Rube Goldberg machines and thinking about like kind of cause and effect and like the process of something. I think that was a big part of it. We made the short prior to that YouTube channel, Primitive Technology, coming out. But when it did come out, I was like, that's also a big part of it. Seeing kind of every step of the process of something being made was like a really wonderful thing. And the idea of kind of creating this totally made up nature that has its own symbiotic relationships and its own ecosystems that are all kind of interconnected, and then these characters finding sort of their functionality out of each thing. I think that was a big part of it, and especially the idea of like I was watching a lot of videos of people, these guys in India that were like constructing these boxes, like for like shipping boxes, that sort of thing, like as fast as they could, and it was just like super fast. And I was like, there's something so satisfying about that. You know, someone that's just gotten so used to a thing on like an assembly line, they figured that out. So thinking about these characters kind of in that space and in this nature, where it's like they've clearly been here for a while. They clearly understand this, and they're kind of using it to their for their needs. There's a sort of a utility to it. I think that was kind of where a lot of it was pulling from. But yeah, I mean, I was saying this to Ash, like, you know, a lot of it was just sort of like looking at these kind of Rube Goldberg machines and thinking about it in terms of that, especially with the short where it's like all of the dialogue. I mean, there's no dialogue, and all of the storytelling is a narrative. It's just visual. You know, it's an 8-minute long short, but I think it's kind of really testing the audience's patience. By the end of it, you're like, I don't know if this is like, what is the payoff for this kind of a thing? You know, I think that was, and so I think it was a challenge to sort of extract that into a full blown series. I think I wanted to do a version where there is no dialogue in the whole series. And it was just that basically, But I think that the network, that was the kind of main pushback, was just like, no, we need like more traditional story arcs and characters and that sort of thing. And in hindsight, I'm actually glad that that was the direction we went in. I feel like I would have pigeonholed us or something if we had those kind of limitations. So.
It's interesting because I had a brief conversation with Alberto Mielgo, and he hates dialogue too. Like he would
Oh
like when
man,
you
I
watch
could
his films, like there's
yeah.
just no dialogue either.
It's funny that you say that. I can totally see, at least with Miego, like the naturalism. Like he's a fan of that kind of like naturalistic kind of. I think that like I hate stuff that feels rehearsed and scripted. I think that's it just doesn't feel natural, it doesn't feel real. So I totally get it. It's not that I hate people talking. It's just that like you want to really kind of, we were pulling references too from things that I was creating like sizzles and all that stuff for the storyboard artists, and Charles and I were kind of like giving them reference material to kind of go off of and think of things thematically, and also just kind of like the sort of philosophy of the show or whatever. But also just like if you're thinking about a fight that happens in this, well, think about Leo DiCaprio getting mauled by a bear in The Revenant. That's your North Star, not some cool, I don't know, Justice League fight or something. Something
Justice
that just
League
feels a
fight.
little bit more real,
Right.
Nothing against Justice League. I'm just, that's
Yeah, it's one feels more, hey, here it is. It is what it is, and take it or leave it, versus, hey, let's make this popcorn induced action sequence for the sake of making it cool rather than like, yeah, that's interesting. Have you ever played this game, Another World? I'm not sure if it was called like that in US. I it was more of a European name. I think it had like a like different name. It was a Amiga game from the 80s. If you haven't,
I have
if
never
you
heard of it.
haven't, I
Look it
bring it
up.
up because it's like a lot of my friends who watched Scavenger's Reign is like, yeah, there's like the Mobius, and it's mostly because of like the stylistic kind of not similarities, but you could place the two all together and like, yeah, I can see it. To me, Another World is a better reference. And the main reason I'm mentioning this, and maybe there are playthroughs of the game. That was a groundbreaking game of the time because they've bypassed the limitations of the like the graphics computing by making everything in like vectors. So all of the animation are basically calculated vectors, like the shadows and highlights and everything. They just made vector art. So it was more numbers and less of the graphics demand
Very cool.
on the whole thing, which was like groundbreaking at the time. But the reason I'm mentioning it is one of my favorite games of all time, by the way, like super old school. But it was a game in which the character was placed in like this alien world and nothing was explained or exposed. You had to learn everything as you play. And like the story evolves by you playing it. Like obviously there's a storyline and you have to follow. It's like a platform game. But nothing was exposed to you. Like you're immersed into it, and you felt like you are this person in this alien world, like this parallel universe that you were transported to, and you just have to kind of accept it and li live in it. And when I was watching Scavengers, it almost felt like there was no exposition for the nature. There was no exposition for what, like there was no dialogue explaining why those characters behave one way or another, or like, oh, this creature is doing this, like none of that, right? Like it assumed that you're gonna figure that out.
And if you don't figure it out, that's okay too. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. It's just like in the writer's room, I was kept bringing up this sort of analogy of, if we're walking, going on a hike together, there's a good chance we'll talk about anything but the hike itself, you know? Like you're
Right.
just gonna, we're not gonna talk about like the pathway that we're on and the trail that we're on. Or if we do, it would feel forced or something kind of weird about that. And I kind of feel like that's a lot of the times that's how that sort of like heavy exposition feels like, where it's just like you don't need to this kind of see-say thing where you don't need to explain what's going on when you can actually see it. And I think that was a big part of just like the, you know, internally we had names for a lot of these creatures and that sort of thing, but I think it was like that would have been a bad move if you had characters naming them and whatever. It just cheapens it all to me, you know. And I like that it's this big sort of blanket of different kinds of creatures, and there are sort of connections and there are symbiotic relationships that exist, but you don't necessarily need to know about it. And if you're really paying attention, you could kind of follow it, but if not, it's like it's not a big deal. I think that was a nice balance to kind of try and keep throughout, you know.
Yeah. I like that the nature didn't give a fuck about anything in the film. It was just there.
Merciless, yeah.
Yeah. It almost felt like when you would see a new creature or a plant or like whatever was happening, whether it was like a nature event, it felt like it could be dangerous, but it could also be magnificent, you know? Like there was
Totally.
no, like it almost felt like, to me, it felt like watching it almost always being at the edge of a seat, kind of trying to figure out like what's gonna happen next. And not in the way of like jump scares or action sequences and whatnot, but just like this kind of uneasy kind of feel to the world that literally doesn't care about the characters. And that's again like why I'm bringing Another World, because when you play that game, that's exactly the feeling you have all the time. Like, you don't know if it's beautiful, it is, but also
Or
it's
danger.
dangerous, and you don't know what's, you know.
I
So that
mean
was.
that was a yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I mean, I think a big inspiration point always was just kind of like the nature that exists here, you know, on Earth. Like it's sort of the same thing, and we the idea of these characters kind of suffering, going through their own sort of inner turmoil and pain, and it's against the sort of backdrop of this nature that is in a lot of ways I'd say like neutral, merciless. It's unforgiving. It can be beautiful, but it could be dangerous. And I think that kind of contrast throughout was always really nice, especially when you have a character like Kamen, for instance, who was in a very kind of mentally fragile state
One of my
from the
favorite
very
characters, by the way. Yeah.
you know, just very influenced by his surroundings and sort of kind of gave into that. And by episode five, of course, you know, was just totally just gave up and was like, I don't know.
Yeah, he seems like he is sort of a villain, but he isn't. He's like the most tragic character of them all. In a way, I don't know, spoilers, but if you haven't seen the whole thing yet, shame on you.
Who's a character that you like empathize with? I mean, you know,
Right.
he's an out he sucks, but you kind of, I don't know, you sort of feel for him at the end. I mean, that was another thing too, of just typical animation tropes, and like maybe if we're gonna have an antagonist, you're gonna have a villain. Maybe they're not totally a villain. Maybe this creature that pulls Kamen in, it's just a creature that does, that's what it does. And it was just kind of a weird crossfire with these two characters and unfortunate circumstances. But like Kamen was in a fragile state and Hollow was just doing what it does. I think it was just kind of like looking at it in terms of that and just trying to avoid certain tropes. Like, why does it have to be this kind of villainous thing that's just always, you know, I don't know, has no other sort of, it's one dimensional and has no other mission than to just cause pain on people. That doesn't, I don't, didn't make a lot of sense
Yeah.
for what we were doing.
How closely did you work with writers on this? Like,
Yeah, very close. I mean, we had a writer's room in the beginning, before
And how
we.
did you obviously come up with who's like the best person to write this?
I guess reading scripts, reading a lot of scripts every writer kind of had their own sort of forte that they brought to the table and it was really nice. But I don't know of any. I think I could safely say that no writer was specifically a sci-fi writer, which I think was beneficial. It was the same thing with the animators too. It's like we all were kind of came from a different, like our background. We're doing independent animation and so it was a lot of sort of like unorthodox methods and approaches and making things. And I think the same thing with writing. It was just sort of pulled from I guess a little bit more random things than and not to say that if we had like a Dune someone that was a writer on Dune that it would be a problem. I mean, I'm sure it'd be great, but I guess it just allowed for like we were like naive about certain things almost to a like our benefit, like it almost
Yeah.
was helpful. It didn't stifle us in any way. We were just thinking about the story more than anything.
Yeah, because it felt when you watch it, it does, and I think comes back to the exposition thing again, is that it feels very kind of like a true sci-fi in a way of not trying to explain things scientifically or make it sense. Make a sense of it in terms of like, oh, what the world in the future would be like, or like what kind of genre it's supposed to be. It almost like it pulls you back to the good old times where, you would read sci-fi books from authors you wouldn't hear about unless, someone tells you like, you gotta read this book, I
Totally.
remember, because I come from Poland. I was born in Poland. So one of the sci-fi writers over there is Stanisław Lem, who wrote Solaris. And
Oh, yeah.
when you read Solaris, it's such a wild book to read. I obviously watched the film. I think film encapsulate like captures the essence of it. There's two films actually. There's the Tarkovsky, I think, directed the original. If I remember correctly, my memory's kind of like going away so very
I
quickly.
think you're right.
But I think, I mean, it might be a good reference too, because it kind of relates to the idea. Well, in this case, it's the entire planet having an influence on the characters and sending them hallucinations without any like agenda is just what the planet does, right? And it felt very like, yeah, they were on like a space station and whatnot. That's sort of like a very old school kind of sci-fi approach, but it never focused on that specifically. And it was more focused on the characters themselves and how they interact with this planet. And that was sort of like the part of it that was, to me, like this kind of very pure, no spaceships. Like, we're not making it about spaceships or guns, sci-fi cities and neons and like any of that stuff, And it seems like the writing. I mean, to me, the writing on the shows matters the most. And like when I watch Scavengers, that was like probably one of the best written animated shows I've seen in a while. And I don't want to be like kissing ass here. It's just like I'm a big like it's an amazing show. Like
Oh man, amazing.
one
Thank
of the
you.
better ones I've seen in a while for sure. Certainly one of the most original ones, right?
Thank
But
you.
I'm always interested because like I like to write my own stories too. I've been directing, getting into directing for past year and a half, maybe two. And it's like you quickly realize like how important writing is, because you can kind
Oh,
of
for sure.
cinematography and compose shots to make them look cool, but if the writing kind of sucks, then you know.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. I would also say that, like, I think that, when we were doing the writing, a lot of the times it was like the description didn't always have the visuals that you saw on screen. It was more about kind of like following the characters and their arcs and that sort of thing. And so there was a lot of stuff that I was like, okay, well, the concept artists are kind of building the ecosystem here, and the writer's room was going on here. And with our production, there was a lot of transparency and a lot of overlap. So sometimes the concept designers would share, we would share what they're doing with the writers, and that would inspire some things. But it would be a lot of kind of like interweaving, an artist sort of like the composer making music, and then that sort of spawned an idea. And I think it was just kind of like doing a lot of that sort of thing. So a lot of the times, like a first pass on a script before anything almost wouldn't have a lot of those the organisms or a lot of the nature stuff that you see. It was like you painted that on later. So it just depended on each episode. But I think for the characters, that was the top priority, was just kind of like, what is Ozzy's arc and Levi's arc? What are they doing, and where is that going? And then let's now add this next layer of like, what is their environment? What is this? What are their surroundings, and how does that affect them, basically?
Who came up with the idea of killing Levi the way it was killed? Because that was the first time I was like really fucking sad to see a bunch of metal pieces flying in the air. Like, what the fuck?
There was something, the idea of like in the episodes leading up to that, when Levi's talking about how she kind of like feels pain, and how they say they're like feeling pain, and they end up like they're kind of gaining sentience through the planet and everything. I don't know. I was really into the idea of Levi and Ozzy kind of bonding and kind of creating this relationship. And as much as we could, we tried to kind of pull Levi away from just feeling like a utility, like a utility bot, just that they have this other kind of the sentience is something that kind of a big part of it is what makes their relationship so much more special, because now they're like two people, two characters that really are bonding in a way. And I think that's kind of like doing a lot of that kind of groundwork to get to the point in episode six where it's like, oh, well, when they die, it's sort of if it really hurts, you feel it,
It did. Like, what
That's great.
the hell?
That's great.
Yeah, it was I think it's because, and this is like my observation, is the show allows you to observe and it leaves breadcrumbs. And whether it's like breadcrumbs that will explain what will happen later, or will relate to what happened later, or those that are basically building your relationship with characters, right? So like Levi dying in episodes, I think it was episode six, right? I think it's made so much impact because you get to see him through episode one through six and you get enough interactions to care. And yeah, I think the characters, just generally all the characters, felt like you really cared for them. No matter how much screen time, like they're so well written, in my opinion, that you really knew, like you could really care. Yeah, kudos for finding like picking the writers that for that show, because
Jesus.
like
I'll let them know that you that's great.
because I
Same
know
here.
it's very hard to come across shows these days. Like I try to force myself to watch like a lot of shows, but there's only like very few that really hit the mark in terms of storytelling and how they are written, and then going beyond that, like how, you know, how they look visually and all that. So what was speaking of, like, lingering on that for a bit, we were talking about the short and how it kind of transitioned over the years to become the film. What was that period like? Because it was like a couple of years, right? Between the short.
2015 to 2000. Yeah, I mean, till last year. It was a lot of stop and go kind of a thing.
Hurry up and wait.
basically, when we made the pilot, for instance, you know, that was with Adult Swim. So it technically kind of went into HBO Max later on. It wasn't even, but there was a lot of in between stuff. I mean, I think that, you know, there was like a shopping deal with one studio, and then it was like, hey, that's not going anywhere. I think ultimately, I mean, I guess making the pilot, I was like, I think this is going to see the light of day. I think this is going to become a show at some point. I just don't know when. And I don't know with who, but it was a lot of stop and go. And honestly, in hindsight, I'm kind of like grateful. It allowed us to kind of stop and think about a lot of this stuff, you know? And I remember when we were first making it and when we were making the pilot, I remember being so concerned about things that were coming out around that time that felt too similar, and I was like, oh, what's the point? What am I doing? It's just funny how much of that kind of like passed by, and I was like, oh, that's insane. And then I remember someone told me this, but apparently, like, I'm not comparing myself to David Lynch at all, but I just thought this was a funny thing. David Lynch was worried about, apparently he was making Eraserhead and had to stop for financial reasons, and it's just, you know, had to kind of like put a pause on everything, and was freaking out that somebody else was going to make Eraserhead. Man, just says it all. Like, you do not have to worry, but it's so like you, and no one's going to make that. But I kind of feel similar with just Scavengers. Like, I was worried about when Annihilation came out. I was terrified at first, but I don't know. It feels like it's a different enough thing.
Yeah, Annihilation was way different. Like, way different. Like, you could argue concept wise, but then like everything kind of is a derivative of everything.
Yeah,
like,
right. No, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because I just finished watching. I haven't watched it up until now. The Black Swan.
Oh yeah,
and I mean, I remember Perfect Blue pretty well, you know.
Yeah, totally.
And
I know, right. When I know, it's crazy when I heard about that. That was insane. I didn't, because it's like shot for shot, right?
In some cases, it's like legit shot for shot.
Crazy, so crazy.
But it's a different enough story. It's a different perspective. You know, director's perspective is different too. It's a slightly different setting, but the clear inspiration. But honestly, it's different, and you can make comparison, but it's different. Like, I don't think it's worse or better. It's different enough.
Rights to it, or was it?
I have
just
no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea. But the interesting part to me was that it didn't take away from the original. Like, it didn't make the original obsolete. And vice versa, right? Like, those two, even though they share some concepts, are two completely different things.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
Anything that if you like look up the Perfect Blue, like Wikipedia, it says that the budget was like 40 grand or something. It's something unbelievably low.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I would be curious. I mean, who knows? Who knows? It's definitely not the Akira budget, which you know, but that was a special movie too. And I don't think Akira would have ever been made. Like, I don't think Akira would be the same thing if it was made like 5 years later, either,
Sure.
because of the climate and you know, the
Very.
economics of the country, all that kind of stuff.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm it's always like the timing that you would think that matters, and maybe it does, but you know, at the end of the day, I think, and at least when I watch something like Scavenger's Rain, it speaks to me. It's like, you know, there's a clear creator's intentions, you know, behind this that are his and original to him. And then whether it becomes successful or not, it's like literally just a roll of the dice, right? Like, because
Yeah, totally.
who knows? Like, all you need is
Yeah.
like one TikTok account to pick it
Yeah.
up, and then it becomes
Yeah,
massive, right? Or it
totally.
doesn't. Like, who
Yeah.
knows?
I mean, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, even with the Pepe stuff, seeing how kind of quick that stuff blew up, it's pretty wild to see, and especially on TikTok and all that.
Yeah, that Peppa stuff is so good, dude. That's so good. And I've watched like all the other little animations you've been making. You're posting those regularly on Instagram. It's just so fun. I was talking to my good friend. He was a VFX art director at Blizzard. He did like the StarCraft cinematics and like the original StarCraft cinema, like the StarCraft II cinematics and World of Warcraft cinematics. He was like, you know, and he just sent me the one you did with the bird.
Oh, yeah. That was like originally that was for like that was an Adult Swim bumper. That was like one
Oh,
of the
okay.
first kind of commissioned little shorts
It's
that was like
so
gonna
dark,
be
dude.
pretty
It's so dark. Like, holy
dark,
shit.
yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, where do you take inspiration for all that stuff? Because it's like there is a very specific kind of taste you have, right?
Sure,
Like, it comes
yeah.
across all of your work. It's very unorthodox, but sometimes like tongue in cheek, you know? And
Yeah.
sometimes like really serious, right?
I don't have a good answer. I don't know. I could tell you that I like to people watch and I like to just sort of observe. I don't know. I mean, if it's just I can kind of get pretty glued to like just seeing people's behavior and just how they act, and I think that sort of is probably where a lot of the inspiration comes from, but I don't have any kind of method or anything like that. It's just at the end of a day, I'll just have a handful of things that I'll be thinking about that I experienced that day, and then I don't know, it'll just sort of come out.
Do you write them down, like ideas that pop up in your head, or
Sometimes, but I don't
just kind of make it flow?
just gonna make it flow. Yeah. I did have a habit for a while of I'll like write stuff down and then I'll like kind of cut it out and I'll have a big pile of just random ideas and then I'll kind of like look through that later on and see where that comes from. But there's no real system or anything.
Just
Yeah.
this is a good idea. Let's just fuck and just hands
I
dirty.
think a lot of it is just like fixating on a thing, just like constant. If it's
Right.
like this barista said a certain thing, and I can't stop thinking about the way they said it, like how they said it, the mood that they were in when they said it, like everything, and I'll just fixate on that. And then if at a certain point it's like thinking about this for a reason, I'm just gonna do something with it, and then by the turn it, but it also depends. It's like I think with a lot of the comedy stuff that's always kind of like there's that itch I want to scratch, and then there's the kind of more sincere stuff that is like Scavengers that I guess is maybe just more observational and like nature, whatever,
Right.
not so much people.
Yeah, it seems like from what I pick up, talking to you. It's like there's a lot of serendipity that's happening on the daily basis that you kind of learn to translate into moving pictures, basically.
Yeah, totally. And you know, I think also just kind of like having certain limitations, like knowing like, okay, well, like this bumper has to be 30 seconds long. And right. So what kind of a story can I actually even tell with that or whatever? I mean, I like those kind of challenges. I think that's kind of really fun. And I think what stresses me out more than anything is having like just a ton of options. I like setting kind of parameters as quickly as possible, going in and kind of being like, well, I know what I'm not able to do. So a lot of it is like self-imposed deadlines, and especially when you're working in TV and that sort of thing.
Right.
It's already got its own challenges, and I think that creatively can be really helpful.
Yeah, I always wonder like how other creatives deal with the concept of perfectionism and not really like leaning into it too much.
Sure. Yeah. They're like it comes like a handicap.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It can.
I mean, that the process and just kind of, there's always a period where it's like, this shot could be better, but is it good enough? And, you know, I would also say that, like, I would not have been able to make that show without Charles, without the whole team. It was a lot of artists that did an unbelievable job and really kind of had their own, were fixated on different things. I think that was a big part of, you know, like Benji Brook was the supervising director and he was phenomenal and he was fixated on certain things and just kind of making sure, but those were things that I didn't care so much about or Charles didn't care so much about. We all had our own kind of like things. Charles was kind of like overall picture, color, backgrounds. That was, you know, he was really covering the art department. And I think Benji's like such a stickler with like, hookups, for instance, this is a weird example, but you know, like a hookup shot and it's not right. Hooking up, so we got to figure that out. And for me, it's a lot of it's like pacing and editing and the music and the sound and all that stuff. So it was I'm very fortunate to have the team that I had on the show. And
it's all about having those lieutenants.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was like a beehive kind of, you know, mentality kind of working on this. We were all kind of humming at the same time. And it was a cool vibe.
Do you think that period of time between Scavengers and Scavengers Reign, that pause that you, well, not real pause, but there was like a lot of like, you know, I call it like in Hollywood, we call it hurry up and wait. It's like, you go to the meeting, like, yeah, we're doing this. And like 6 months later, like, are we doing this? No, you have to be tomorrow. Like, you have to be on the meeting tomorrow. You go on the meeting, like, yeah, we'll maybe do it in a week. Do you think that period of time helped to build like enough? I don't know if experience is the right word. I think of it from a perspective of like, you know, I'm just gonna like self insert for a second. Like I'm thinking where I am right now and what I'm able to do in animation and directing, building my own team and you know dealing with talent. And if I had to place myself in the same position, let's say, even just 3 years ago, it would almost feel like a impossible task. If you know what I mean, it's like there's certain things. Project per project, you start to pick up. And you learn.
I talk about this sometimes where, you know, there were projects that I made in my 20s, in my early 20s, that I was so gung-ho about it becoming a TV show. And in hindsight, I'm like so happy that it did not, because I do think that it would have been creatively stifling. I think that me not getting sort of the opportunities early on in my life sort of allowed, like opened doors and allowed me to kind of grow in certain ways that I don't think I would have. If I had a super successful show in my early 20s, I think I would have just been stuck in that, and not, there'd be no reason to kind of grow. I like that, that it was a lot of hurdles and a lot of things that kind of like held me back, at least to now. You know, I'm about to be 38 years old, and I feel mentally good, and I feel like I know myself, and I, you know, I know what I want, and I don't know. It's just feeling a lot more kind of like level-headed, and grounded, I think. And I think that just really helps, just thinking about that as an artist and making things, is it's just a, it feels a lot clearer. And I think there's a moment too, for me at least, it felt like, I used to always regret the things that I make. Like, I'll make it and then I just want to move on because I don't want to think about it, and it's embarrassing coming back to that. But like, it's happening less and less, I'll say. And I am proud of like something like Scavengers. I'm very proud of it. I'm sure there are some things that I wish I could have fixed and whatever, but like overall, I'm proud of the show. I think it turned out well. So you know, that there's a lot of that kind of stuff I think about.
Was there anything in Wait, hold on. I don't think I asked you that. I'm very curious. It's one of like my top priorities to ask you, actually. How long was the production on the show? Like,
Well, the pilot was about, I don't know, a little less than a year, but then the rest of the 11 episodes was about 1.5 years.
okay, that's crazy.
It was crazy. It was crazy. I mean, it was just stacked. You know, it's an unbelievable amount of work in such a short period, and
Does that
you
include writing, like from scratch, or did you guys have some resemblance of what those episodes gonna look like before that?
I think with writing, it was probably another like extra 3 months. So,
Okay. Wow. All right.
yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You just have no time to pause. You just have to
No, definitely
make
not.
like
Definitely not.
every. I mean, it's just a thing. I mean, and I think that's kind of the case with a lot of TV shows. It's just a matter of how much extra that the creator wants to give or whatever. But I was just drained. I was just absolutely drained at the end of every day. I like mashed potato brains. You know, I couldn't hold a conversation. I was so dead. But yeah, it was intense.
Do you think that was like the hardest thing you've ever done? Like,
Yeah, I mean, you know, also that was it's definitely yes and no. I guess it's like because I was doing that, I was also in the writer's room for Common Side Effects, and I was also making 100 Pepe animations, and I had to work on those animations with, and obviously I was working with artists, and they were, but working with Matt Fury and kind of doing those while, you know, it was kind of, it was just a lot.
they were excellent.
But yeah, it was just an insane hand, just a lot. But you know, I'm working on a lot of projects right now, and I think I'm managing my time pretty well. I'm not, it's a lot, but I can manage it, and it's not stressful. Like, it's like a healthy stress, you know.
I think sometimes you need like we need a little bit of a pressure and discomfort to get the best out of ourselves. So I truly believe that, you know. But I'm
Totally.
very curious because everyone is so different, and you know, I look back, there were certain projects that I consider like were life-changing in terms of like how I think about life because of those, you know.
Totally.
But yeah, that's interesting. Like, yeah, the approach to be like more level-headed. But it still sounds very crazy to me. I was a year and a half. That sounds very insane.
Yeah, but I would also say that like my mind works, I think, where it's like I'm excited about a thing, and then when I'm kind of a little over it, I can hop onto another thing very quickly, and then you get tired of that and you can jump back. And so I think I've just gotten used to, for I've been 20 years now or something, been doing that, so I can jump from just like five things or whatever. And every time I kind of jump to the next one, it's exciting, it's new, it feels fresh, as opposed to just kind of like one thing and that's it and that's my focus. I feel like I'd go a little nuts if I had to do that. So, and I've got a studio now that called Green Street, and we're doing a lot of really cool projects here, and so it gives me that opportunity to sort of just jump around.
That's
So,
cool. That's
yeah.
cool. I'm super excited to see what's gonna be next, because I
Crazy.
immediately became a fan.
Thank
So
you.
very excited. Big congrats on Scavengers again. I mean,
Thank
it's a
you.
special show for sure.
Thank you so
Like
much.
I've
Appreciate it.
watched your episode with Ash, and Ash was praising you like from start to
So
finish with
sweet.
no
That's
end.
so
And
sweet. What a
yeah, he's
sweet
like the
guy.
sweetest guy too.
Yeah.
I want to say that there's the same level of fandom, let's say,
Yeah.
attached from my end, but maybe I'm just a little less expressive, let's say. But
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I definitely I enjoyed the heck out of it. It was one of those where like I really wanted to binge to know what's next, but I also,
Yeah.
you know what it reminds me of? It's like I started reading Meditations from Marcus Aurelius,
Oh yeah, I love that book.
and I made myself to read it in a way where I read it to a point where there's a passage that I highlight and then I stop. I let it like sink in and
That's
like really
great, yeah.
marinate and get enough kind of processing time to truly understand what this passage means and how
Love
it's like affects me personally.
that.
And
Love
watching Scavengers was exactly that for me. I was like, let's watch this
that. That's
episode.
great.
And as much as I want to know what happens next, it's like, no, I need to like soak it in, take it
Yeah, I hear
easy,
that.
go
That's
back to
not
the
true.
time where you would watch it an episode a week, you know?
I love that. The idea of like sort of ingesting entertainment that way, is so much nicer. I mean, it's kind of how we watch movies. It's like it's a treat,
Right.
I try to be careful about that kind of thing of just how much am I just how much content am I taking in, and like it's just if it's just at a certain point where it's so overly saturated and I don't remember anything. I just don't. I'd rather be
Yeah.
excited about a show or excited about a movie and really like think about it and kind of like what you're saying, like mull over it.
Yeah. That's just the best
Meditate on
way,
it.
I think.
Yeah.
Just get full fully immersed experience out of it that
Definitely.
lasts.
Definitely.
I've been
Absolutely.
recommending left and right, like you gotta watch Scavengers. Like pretty much all my friends
Thank
like are
you.
fucking hating me now. Just like how much I say, like, you gotta watch Scavengers. On the repeat, like a broken tape. So yeah, super excited. I mean, I want to be mindful of your time. I know we're kind of like around the time where we were supposed to wrap it up. Really appreciate you coming on
Yeah,
to chat
definitely. Thanks for
just for a
having me.
bit. And yeah, I'm super super excited. What's
Thank you,
next?
and thanks for spreading the gospel. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna preach until people hate me. Is there anything? Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say TBD on season two,
Okay.
but hopefully TBD. Not sure
I'm
yet.
gonna cross my fingers. It's better happen.
Yeah,
But we know how it is in Hollywood, you know. I've been on both ends, working as an artist with like different shows and now like directing, and it's just like both have their benefits, but
Totally. Absolutely.
yeah, super excited though. TBD. All right, cool. I'll take that. Thank you, Joe.
Cool. Thank you so much. All right.
Yeah.
Have a good one, Michelle.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.